Welcome to the podcast of unfortunate events. And remember, what might seem to be a series of unfortunate events may in fact be the first steps of a journey.
Hey, it's Charlotte.
Hey, it's Riley.
And welcome to the podcast of unfortunate events.
Woo! We're glad you're here.
We're going to be doing a deep dive into the classic series by Lemony Snicket. We're going to release new episodes on Patreon every Tuesday. And we're so excited that you're here.
I know. I'm so excited. We've been planning this for like months now.
I know. And it's finally happening.
Yeah.
We're going to be releasing this episode, the very first one, for everyone to listen to. And if you like it, go check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten. Sign up for the $5 tier and you'll get access to us diving into this entire series.
And also with this tier, you get our normal episodes that we release on Wednesdays, 2 days early, so you'll get them on Mondays, and you'll get them ad-free.
Woo! What a bargain.
Hell yeah.
Actually, I don't know if that's a bargain, but...
Okay, it's $5. That's a bargain if I've ever heard one.
You read this as a child, right?
I sure did. It was one of my favorites.
Me too.
So good.
I love this series. I remember being like 10 or 11 and I would literally like climb a tree in my backyard with my little Lemony Snicket and I would read it in the tree.
What a vibe.
I know. I wasn't like a regular girl. I was like a tree girl.
Cool girl. Quirky girl.
This will be fun because I don't remember how it ends.
I think I kind of do, actually, because I also really enjoyed this movie.
But the movie only went into the first three books.
That's true. Never mind then, because I could not even tell you what happens at the end of the series.
It gets darker, like progressively darker as the series goes on. There's more in depth. There's like a bunch of like conspiracies, secret organizations. And I will say, I absolutely hate the way they did both the movie and the series.
Really?
The TV series, yes.
I never saw the TV series, just the movie.
They did bad for both of them. They could have done so much better on either one, and they did not. And that pisses me off because this series is so good, and it had so much potential to be a really good, I would say, honestly, TV series over a movie, and they just didn't take the opportunity that Lemony Snicket gave them. So we'll do this podcast instead.
Okay, but I will say I did enjoy the movie. I did like the movie.
It was all right, but it was nothing compared to the books.
No.
I guess you could say for most things, like the Harry Potter books are so much more like in depth and detailed than the movies. Same with these books. But like if you did a TV series, you could have done so much better than what they did. And then they just like stopped making it.
I know.
Bitches.
They could have gone so much further.
But they didn't. You fumbled the bag. So every week we're going to be covering two chapters of the book. There are 13 books. Each book has 13 chapters. So like there's a little theme going on. So today we'll be covering chapters 1 and 2 of book 1, which is called The Bad Beginning.
And it is a bad beginning. That's for sure.
It is a real bad beginning. All right. So our dedication into the book is to Beatrice, darling, dearest, dead. And every book has a dedication to Beatrice, which is, I guess, Lemony Snicket's late wife. Yeah.
Okay. Kind of sad.
It is sad. And the dedications are always like morbid and sad. And reading this, I'm like, damn, I don't know if I should have been reading this as a child.
Honestly, I was thinking about that as well while I was reading it. I was like, why was I reading this as a child?
Lots of kids were reading. I feel like this was like behind Harry Potter. This was like the series to be reading.
Oh, yeah. 100%. It was like Twilight, but for children.
Yeah. So we are introduced to the three Baudelaire children, Violet, Klaus, and Sunny. And we are immediately warned that this story will not be a happy one. Their parents allowed them to spend a gloomy day at Briny Beach as long as they promised to be back to their large mansion in time for dinner. So they're like little rich kids.
They are.
Yeah, just hanging out at the beach. 14-year-old Violet has her hair tied up with ribbon, as she always did when she was thinking up a new invention. And each of the kids has their own little hobby. Violet is an inventor, Klaus is a reader, Sunny is a biter.
I know, I love that. Little Sunny.
Violet is skipping rocks across the water, thinking up ways to create something that could retrieve the rock for her. So she's just brainstorming.
She was my favorite.
She's a little genius girly.
Yes.
12-year-old Klaus is a bookworm who's read almost every book in their extensive family library, and he's examining some creatures in the water that he'd recently been reading about. And Sunny is one and cannot speak coherently yet and loves to bite things. That's like her hobby. And in the book, she's always like, "Fabizabadeh!" And then the narrator of the book will be like, "What she meant was, fuck you, bitch."
I know. I also love the way these books are written.
I know.
I just love it.
Sunny shrieks when she sees a strange man approaching them on the beach. The older two siblings notice the man too, and as he gets closer, they recognize him as the banker, Mr. Poe, who is the most useless, infuriating adult character in these books.
Honestly, he pisses me off so bad. I'm like, you could have done so much more for these children.
And yet,
all of this could have been avoided. Yeah. Yeah. Fuck Mr. Poe.
When he reaches them, they exchange how do you do's, and Mr. Poe tells them that he has some very bad news for them. Their parents are dead, and their whole house was burnt down. The fire department didn't arrive in time to save them, unfortunately.
Also, the way he presented that information to them, I was like,
yeah.
Sir.
Yeah.
These are children.
Yeah, and he's like, unfortunately, you're orphans now.
Sorry, mom and daddy are dead.
Also, why'd they send the banker?
So many questions.
Where's the social worker?
Honestly.
Mr. Poe says that he'll be taking them to his home for the time being. Why? Where's the social worker?
Yet again.
He's a banker. And he says their fortune will belong to the bank until Violet turns 18, at which point it will go to her. And then he motions for them to follow him away from the beach, and the three orphans do as they're told.
So, of course, the children are absolutely miserable. Their parents are dead. I feel like, honestly, the way that Mr. Poe, like, approached them and presented this information to them made it so much more worse. There was no, like, love.
No. He wasn't like, do you need a hug?
Yeah, nothing. I mean, I feel like he was, like, sympathetic to a point, but not near what he should have been.
I mean, after all, he is a banker, not a social worker, so he's literally not trained for this situation.
True. He's probably like, why the fuck am I doing this?
Why the fuck are you doing this, Mr. Poe?
We are also asking that. Mr. Poe had brought them back to their burnt down mansion to see if there was anything that remained. It was awful. Everything was burnt down. All they could see were like remnants of the things that they did love. And like, another question. Why did he bring them back there?
To rub it in, to make them sad.
I know. He said, look at your burnt down mansion. Not rich anymore, are you?
You'd think that the rich ass parents would have some sort of like plan in place that was much better than the one that they had.
You would think.
But they're just like, if our house burns down, take them to the banker.
Yeah. Let the banker handle it all. It's fine. For the meantime, the Baudelaire children lived with Mr. and Mrs. Poe and their two children over a dinner of boiled meat, potatoes, and veggies.
Yummy.
I know. I was like, And in the book, he says, like, blanched, but this is another meaning for boiled. And I'm like, that's disgusting.
I hope you like boiled fish.
Yummy. Everything boiled. No seasoning. They will be leaving the Poe household the next morning. Mr. Poe informs them that they will be going to live with a distant relative, Count Olaf. Violet, Klaus, and Sunny are all basically like, who the fuck is that?
You're close. Never heard of
him. You should know him. You know him?
Wasn't he like, but they mean like geographically close? Because they're like, we actually have family we know. And he's like, no. She said closest, like,
yeah,
geographically close.
Mr. Poe tells them that their parents' will instructs that the children be raised in the most convenient way possible, and Count Olaf is the only relative who lives within the city limits. Klaus questions him and asks him how exactly is he related to them, and Mr. Poe tells them that he is either a third cousin four times removed or a fourth cousin three times removed. And I'm like, at that point, that's not family.
That is not
that's family. Not a relative.
No.
That's a stranger.
Literally a stranger. And they did no background checks on this man. Where is the social worker?
CPS! Where are you? Violet asks, if he lived in the city, then why didn't their parents ever invite him over? And Mr. Poe tells them that Count Olaf is a very busy man. He's an actor by trade and often travels around the world with various theater companies. And Klaus is like, I thought he was a count. And Mr. Poe is like, he's a count and an actor. I feel like at this point, Mr. Poe was probably like, can you guys shut the fuck up?
The classic count/actor.
Yeah, you know the one. Klaus and Violet continue to question him and try and gather more information, but Mr. Poe is busy as fuck and he's just not having it. And he tells the children he needs to go back to the bank to work. The Baudelaire children head upstairs to pack their bags and head to bed. At this time, when they're like packing their bags, getting ready to go to bed and like all that, Sunny is just crawling around the room, biting Edgar and Albert's shoes, which is Mr. Poe's two sons. But she's just biting their shoes. So she leaves something so they can remember her, which I thought was so funny.
But his kids are like little assholes.
Yes, they are. They're like little punk ass boys. Mr. Poe wakes the children up in the morning and tells them it's time to get ready to go. Even though Violet doesn't really enjoy Mr. Poe's house or staying in the boys' room with them, she's really nervous to leave. I feel like that's so understandable. There's so much changes for them at this point. I just feel so sad for them.
Yeah, they're going through it. This is like the most traumatic event of their life, and some asshole banker is just like handling all of their affairs in a horrible way.
Yeah, just a very cold way. Mr. Poe and the children are now driving down the cobblestone streets, and he turns down an alley lined with pale brick houses. He stops in front of the prettiest house on the block and tells them, "Here we are, your new home." A nicely dressed older woman calls out to them, "Hello there, you must be the children Count Olaf is adopting." Violet tells her yes, they are, and introduces them. We learn the woman's name is Justice Strauss, and she is Count Olaf's neighbor. And I love Justice Strauss.
Did you know that in the movie, I believe it's the movie, it's Joan Cusack. And then in the series, it was Catherine O'Hara. So Moira Rose for Justice Strauss.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. But Justice Strauss always pisses me off.
Really?
Yeah. All of the adults in these books are essentially useless.
That's true. That's true. They're a big fat letdown. Most of them are a big fat letdown to the children. Except for what? Why can't I remember his name?
Are you talking about man? Montgomery?
Yes, yes.
That's the next book. The Reptile Room.
I can't wait for that one. The children then look over to see their new home, and it is nothing compared to Justice Strauss's home or even any of the other homes on the street.
Or any home in the world.
No. Oh my God. The children looked from the well-scrubbed house of Justice Strauss to the dilapidated one next door. The bricks were stained with soot and grime. There were only two small windows, which were closed with the shades drawn, even though it was a nice day. Rising above the windows was a tall and dirty tower that tilted slightly to the left. The front door needed to be repainted, and carved in the middle of it was a image of an eye. The entire building sagged to the side like a crooked tooth. I would immediately start crying.
Yeah.
Say, no, I'm not going in there.
That is not my home. Take me to the orphanage.
Honestly, I'd rather be in an orphanage. They say their goodbyes to Justice Strauss, and Klaus knocked on Count Olaf's door. The door creaked open after a minute, and out came Count Olaf with a hello, hello, hello. Hello, hello, hello. And he creeps me out.
He's a psychopath. Even reading these books, I'm like, he is insane. Like, I think reading this as an adult, I was like, he is way darker than I remember.
Yes. Yes. He makes me feel like yucky. Yes. I don't like him at all.
No.
He was very tall and very thin, dressed in a gray suit that had many dark stains on it. His face was unshaven, and rather than two eyebrows, like most human beings have, he had just one long one. His eyes were very, very shiny, which made him look both hungry and angry.
Hangry.
Hangry. The children stepped inside with Mr. Poe behind them. This was the dirtiest room they had ever seen. Everything was filthy, from the stuffed lion head on the wall to the bowl of apple cores that sat on a small wooden table.
Apple cores? Decor.
Artsy. Mr. Poe says this room could use some work, and Count Olaf says, well, perhaps with some of the children's fortune, he could fix it up. And Mr. Poe says, absolutely not. No.
Nope.
They do not get the fortune until Violet turns 18.
He said, if I'm protecting one thing in this situation, it's the money.
I'm a banker. The children could see this angered Count Olaf. Violet even thought he may strike Mr. Poe. But Count Olaf says, all right then, and tells the children he will show them to their room now. Mr. Poe says his goodbyes and tells them they can reach out to him at the bank whenever they need. Klaus tells him he doesn't even know where the bank is, and Count Olaf tells him he has a map, telling Mr. Poe goodbye and shutting the front door.
I have a map. It's fine.
Fuck you. Shut up. The children all had a sense of dread and wished they could stay at Mr. Poe's. When they looked down, they could see a tattoo of an eye, like the one on his front door, on Count Olaf's ankle. They always wondered, for the rest of their lives, if they would feel like Count Olaf was always watching them.
Ooh.
And that is the end of chapter 2, baby.
Ominous.
I know. Scary.
I can't believe I read this as a child.
I know. It's honestly jarring. Should not be reading that as a child.
No, I was like, as an adult, I was like a little triggered. Like, towards the end of this book, I was like, Count Olaf did what?
I know. I was like, these poor children.
I know.
None of this is okay.
So next Tuesday, we'll be diving into chapter 3 and 4, where we get a better look at Count Olaf's house.
Mm.
We get to know Count Olaf a little better, unfortunately. And we see what happened next with the children.
Just some more bad things happening.
Unfortunate events.
Yeah.
If you liked this episode, make sure you check out our Patreon, patreon.com/smutupandlisten. We'll be doing this every Tuesday until the end of the series.
Woo! So that's a lot of eppies.
That was a lot of eppies.
Tell your friends, but not your creepy uncle, fourth removed. And we'll see you later, you unfortunate rats.